Welcome to the GEMS Report, brought to you by Clarion Events, Fire and Rescue Group, and the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. I'm Ted Lee, the editor-in-chief of GEMS, and along with Jeff Frankel, the managing editor, we will be bringing you industry leaders, subject matter experts, to discuss news, hot topics, and all things EMS-related. Today, we have a very special guest to talk about Women's History Month and women in EMS. Deputy Director Sharon Talbert from MEDIC, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Ted. Thank you for having me. As you said, I am Sharon Talbert. I am Deputy Director of Professional Services for Mecklenburg EMS Agency in North Carolina, otherwise known as MEDIC, and I am glad to be here with you.
So just to give us a little bit of background, can you kind of run us through your history and how you elevated to this level? Because this is a pretty significant position.
It is. And I am kind of proud and a little bit odd that I am the first female deputy director at MEDIC. And I have never thought of myself as a trailblazer, but when I look back, I have seen that I have been the first female in multiple iterations throughout what can be my EMS fire career and in prior careers where I was working before EMS. So I started really getting into healthcare when I was in high school. I became the first female athletic trainer at my high school, went off to college and grad school for sports medicine, exercise science, and became a certified athletic trainer. And when I was finishing my master's thesis, I really wanted to take an EMT course to be better prepared in how I could offer emergency services for the athletes at the events that I was covering, and did that and realized that that was a passion. And so I began volunteering at my local fire department, originally just on EMS, but ultimately joined the fireside as well and became the first female EMS captain of that fire department. And then ultimately was able to combine a couple careers and join MEDIC over 10 years ago. Started as the HR manager and then was promoted as the first deputy director. And so it's been a very interesting journey. And again, not things that I was aiming for, but have seen that I have continued to move forward in non-typical positions.
Yeah, that athletic trainer EMS relationship seems to be kind of common. I mean, my background in EMS education, I've seen quite a few students make that bridge and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to take the EMT class just so I know a little bit more. And then to your point, they get that, oh, wait a minute, I really like this. This is cool. I want to get involved. So that's very interesting. So you mentioned, you know, trailblazing. Kind of what are you seeing nowadays, you know, as women are transitioning more and more into EMS? Because we're seeing kind of more of an even split for a profession that, you know, when I started back, you know, in the mid 90s, you know, people were still kind of, that's a male profession. You know, women go to nursing, men go to EMS and fire. That's what happens. And that's, you know, that's not the case. I come from a fire family and, you know, my sister was a career firefighter as well. So, I mean, she did the same thing. So what are you seeing or, you know, how are you maybe mentoring the new generation into what you're seeing?
So I'm extremely excited because to your point, it is changing. I will be very glad when there isn't a first female at the beginning of any of the titles, right? When it just becomes the norm. And so trying hard here just at MEDIC, not just for other women, but for any of the underrepresented groups, to remove barriers, right? So that they can see themselves in the position and they can say, oh, great, I can do that. The sky's the limit. I can go as high, as far, as fast as I want to. And to really trying to work on policies and procedures and social barriers as well. So how do we include inclusion and how do we make sure everybody can bring their full selves? And one of the groups that I am proud to be a founding member of is the Women in Emergency Services. And it is focused on mentoring. It is focused on how do we make it a little less challenging for future generations to come into EMS and move into leadership positions. And the group has a tremendous number of, you know, very passionate women as chapter leaders for the states, also the other founding members. And we're excited to have more and more involvement and more opportunities as we grow the Women in Emergency Services.
And that seems to be the case a lot of times, you know, to your point, people who come in and, you know, the first whoever, you know, whether, you know, African-American, Hispanic, female, doesn't matter, you know, when you come into a place, and if that place doesn't necessarily look kind of like you, you know, that there's an intimidation factor and you're kind of wondering, well, is this a fit for me? Can I fit in here? And, you know, is this right for me? And to your point of mentoring, I think is a big deal to be able to see that, oh, this person is similar to me and they have been successful. So I can do that too. You know, they have kind of trailblazed, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the way to where it's not a first anymore. It's most qualified, you know, into the position to work through. And I think that's a great thing. So for Women in Emergency Services, I mean, you mentioned the mentor stuff, and how long has this organization been kind of alive? You know,
So we're in our second year, and so still very much growing. I'm gonna be wrong on the exact number, but we have over 200 women who are now members. You do not have to be a member to benefit from a lot of the weekly newsletters. We're doing podcasts just like you. And we are starting mentorship programs. We had a test run on one, didn't work out as we had hoped. So we're looking for new opportunities to make those mentorship opportunities more viable and more accessible for everybody since we are nationwide. So it is brand new. Encourage anybody to look us up on the internet and take part, join us. It really is. When you mentioned, right, about the firsts and seeing yourself, it's not just about being in those positions. It's really about being empowered in those positions. Everybody brings a unique perspective. And if you're at, quote unquote, the table, but you don't feel empowered to speak your truth, speak your words, then you're not really yet at a place where you can make the differences and achieve what you want to achieve. And it can be really hard. So these types of organizations or others like yourself can help you, support you, help you understand that it is okay to speak your truth. And yes, it's going to sound different. And yes, there may originally be some resistance. That kind of camaraderie, support from others who have been there and are doing this can really be essential in making you a more integral part of a team and pushing forward to be successful.
So you mentioned the podcast and the mentorship. What other programs or, you know, objectives are, you know, Women in Emergency Services, you know, reaching towards? You might not be there just yet, but, you know, what's on the future for it, and what are you trying to do?
So I believe the most important part is the mentorship. So providing an opportunity for individuals who are coming up in EMS or in any of the emergency services to really have a platform where they can learn and understand how they can best represent themselves. We are also trying to encourage a platform where we'll have opportunities for education topics that might not be, they're not specific to women, but it does encourage skill development. It does encourage the opportunities that folks need to be stronger in their positions. And we have started a book and podcast review club. We just did our first. It hasn't been released yet, but it's a book about financial success, personal financial success. And so how do you manage your life in addition to your work life? And so we're going to continue to do that. We're looking next at a podcast. Those will be launched quarterly. We are having it all of like AAA and those types of conferences. We'll have social get-togethers for networking. We're going to have job boards for executive positions for women, specifically for those agencies, companies that are interested in hiring more diverse candidates. So being able to post those in a one-stop shop for folks to be able to go find some of the fabulous women that are now in EMS and progressing the leadership roles.
Well, that's great. So how do you think this plays into, I mean, of course, it's always been a hot topic, but now, you know, post-COVID, it seems like it's a really hot topic with recruitment and retention of EMS providers, because everybody's talking about it. We're all concerned about the number of providers that we have. And, you know, diversity always comes up. And, you know, if we don't become more diverse, then, you know, our recruiting pool is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So, you know, how do you think that, you know, this plays into our recruiting and retention aspects?
Absolutely. I do think the most important part is that folks can feel included. So it needs to be an environment where anybody can come in and say, yeah, I can fit in here. And that's really hard to achieve, right? That takes constant work. That takes ongoing efforts. One of the most interesting pieces that I learned just recently, I am older than most of the people that we are hiring. Yeah. And when we talk to some of our newest candidates and we ask them what differentiated us from some of the other agencies they were considering, they said it was our social media. And for me, I was blown away by that, because that is not a decision point that has been on my personal radar in any of the jobs that I've previously taken, but it has become so important. And so I think it's really important to connect to the younger generation and understand what's important to them, to put aside your own personal assumptions and make sure that you're listening to your new recruits and hearing what is most important to them. They want those advancement opportunities very quickly. They want a social media engaged agency to work for. They want data and more education, and they're very savvy about all of these elements. And so it's important, I think, to really listen to them, hear what they're saying. And that's the way to capture our up and coming next generation. We added TikTok, and it was right. A huge. Yeah. So yeah. Come on over.
Yeah. For those of us, you know, a little long in the tooth and gray, you know, even considering some of these things as part of the work-life balance, we just didn't, you know. And, you know, the younger generations are coming in. And I used to always say that, you know, we always recruited out of, you know, a five category. You know, their parents were in fire, police, EMS, or the military, or somebody in their family or themselves, you know, had some type of interaction with EMS. And that's what drove them to this interest. And then, of course, the outliers seem to be the people that just kind of fell into it. And I'm like, I'm not really sure how I got here, but now I'm here, type thing. But the, you know, the core group, you know, where they're seeing their parents go through, you know, their work life, they view it very differently, because they have a different lens now, and they see it very directly through their parents or through, you know, family members. And some of them are wanting things a little bit different, and they want to see things a little bit different than what maybe had been historic. And we get kind of comfortable with, well, this is the way we've always done it. And And I love hearing that, and I hate hearing that at the same time, because then you start bringing up the history of EMS, and you're like, we haven't been doing it this way forever. We have been rapidly evolving, you know, as our protocols change, or as medicine changes, as technology changes. We haven't been doing it. So why don't we look for different ways to try to engage? Because if we keep doing the same thing over and over again, we know exactly what the results are going to be. We're going to continue to struggle. So.
And, you know, I think it's really important to keep an eye to that history, because we're a very young industry.
Right.
Very young. And so, you know, that rapid evolution that you spoke of is right on the money. And that's how we're going to ultimately survive, is not change just for change, but change to really push us to be better providers of the services that we offer. And, you know, when you just look in our industry at backboard usage, right? Yeah. That has run a roller coaster of, we always use it. We use it for every patient. No, we're not using it on any patients. Wait, maybe we need it on some patients. And so I think really being aggressive on the best possible clinical care that can be provided and participating in completing research to prove what pre-hospital medicine, those things, well, we've always done it this way. Do we need to do it that way?
Right.
And I think those are important changes.
Yeah. Well, I can remember, because I have prior military experience as well. So, you know, the tourniquet, I remember tourniquets are good. Tourniquets are bad. Tourniquets are good. Tourniquets are bad. Never use a tourniquet. They're going to lose their limb. And they're like, maybe we should start using them a little bit more. And I'm like, okay, you know, your head is just spinning around. And we're like, do we have any rhyme or reason why we're doing these things? And to your point, you know, earlier about, you know, the new generation wanting statistics and wanting data and, you know, wanting proof instead of, because we said so, this is why we're doing it. And we're like, okay, but is there proof in the pudding? Where's the research? Where's the data? Because, you know, they're growing up in a data age where data's flying around and a lot of people are quoting things and, you know, there's a lot of research going on. And just to do things, you know, very anecdotally, well, it works in the hospital, so it's got to work in EMS. And you're like, really? Does it? And, you know, maybe it's not in our best interest to do it that way. So, you know, having, you know, a lot of research, a lot of organizations starting to say, okay, yes, can we prove what we're doing in proof of concept? Is there, are the numbers behind it? And if not, you know, we need to adapt to the changes. And I think some of that adoption of those changes and adapting to the current culture is, you know, it's growing pains. You know, everything happens so fast in EMS. And, you know, we have the people that doggedly hold on to, well, we've always done it this way. This is the way we should be doing it. And you're like, really? Because the numbers don't play out. You know, we can't afford to do it this way. You know, we don't have the personnel to do it this way anymore. We don't have the resources to do it this way anymore. And especially in like rural medicine, I mean, not taking anything away from urban medicine, but, you know, urban medicine tends to have a lot of resources. You've got, you know, 1, 2, 3 level, you know, one trauma centers within 15 minutes of each other, where, you know, rural America, their, you know, community access hospital has been closed for the last 5 years and your closest hospital is 45 minutes or an hour away. That's very different than what we've had to do in the past.
So I would also add, you know, we're talking about women and minorities, and we know that the vast majority of healthcare research has been based on your kind of typical average person, which traditionally has been a white male.
Right. 30 to 60, white male,
yes,
30 to 60.
Yes, so. Yes. Who weighs 185 pounds, right? You know, fascinating when you start to look at the studies and the limited amount of intersectionality of data that would allow you to compare and contrast different populations in the impact of those studies. And so I think that's an important factor for EMS as well, while we evolve, is being really clear on how are different populations impacted by the treatments. Right. We're in a couple of studies right now about pediatrics, asthma, treating asthmatic pediatric patients. And seizures. And so that's not work that's been done pre-hospital. And we really know that there's a tremendous amount of differences in healthcare between women and men, between Caucasian and African-American. And as simply as whether or not a pulse ox is as accurate, right? These are really important characteristics we need to understand to provide the best possible medical care, and how things represent differently in different populations. And so as we say, well, that's how we've always done it, is that the right way for exactly. for all of our populations?
Yeah. So. Well, and you also look at too, not just, you know, one versus the other. You know, you look at areas of urban, suburban, yes. rural, you know, the type of medicine that's provided, the demographics of the population and what their needs are. So, you know, we got really with community paramedic and mobile integrated health, you know, community assessment needs, everything's pushing towards that. But really start thinking about, should your EMS services be doing that as well? You know, constantly looking at, okay, what are the needs of the community? Who are the people that we serve? Where do they need to go? What kind of resources do they have and not have, so that we can best serve the community? Because ultimately that's what we're supposed to be doing. You know, we don't dictate, well, this is the only service that we have, so this is what you get, versus this is what you need, and we're going to try to meet that need as best we can.
For sure. And like you've mentioned, just the differences in transport length. Yeah. We know that EMS functions as the access point for a lot of folks in their healthcare. And there's a variety of reasons for that. How expensive health insurance is, if they're eligible for governmental assistance. And the different settings that you mentioned, with the community hospitals shutting down frequently, you do have to look at, how are these folks utilizing us and why are they utilizing us in this way? Do we have the opportunity, to your point, to utilize other resources to prevent them from even needing 911 service?
Right.
And as you mentioned earlier, our resources are slim regardless of where you are. And so the more that we can remove the unnecessary transports from EMS, the better off we all will be. It's too expensive for patients. It's uncomfortable for patients. Yeah. How do we prevent those?
Well, you know, ultimately, if we could do, you know, a better job at servicing the needs, then of course cost goes down and you know, care is better, and they feel like an active participant in their healthcare, instead of they just tell me what and this is what I do because they told me this is what I do. So you know, community education and you know what the resources are. But I think it goes back to, you know, your diversity and inclusion comments earlier. You know, if our services look more like the populations that we serve, then we can relate better. You know, there's a better understanding, you know, for the ebb and flows that are life, and you know, how do I afford the lights and my medication? How do okay. I get to a doctor's appointment, you know, when we don't have transit here in, you know, rural America? You know, you've got to have something there. And, you know, it's easy for an urban place to say, oh, well, you know, we have the transports, or we have, you know, the subways or the rail systems, but not every place has those. So being able to take those things into consideration becomes pretty important. And we kind of forget, you know, when we're siloed or isolated into this, and we're like, well, I do this every day, so why can't you? We miss the bigger picture on what it's like for them to survive. So.
Absolutely.
So I want to really thank you for taking time out of your busy day to join us on in a very important topic. And, you know, anything else that you'd like to pitch on women in emergency services? Now's your time to do it. So,
So in, you know, women in emergency services, there's really you asked earlier what we're aimed at, and there are four pillars that we're aimed at. And so it's networking, mentorship, education, and empowerment. Those are really the four. And so all of those elements that I talked about, from the podcast, the book reviews, to the mentorship programs, to the networking, job boards, those are all aimed specifically at those. And again, to promote women in emergency services and offer them both a sounding board and also a platform to help them become the best that they possibly can. And you can find Women in Emergency Services, womeninemergencyservices.org online, and look at what we offer and potentially join if you're interested. We're still looking for some state chapter leaders if you are interested in that as well. And that can all be found on our website.
Outstanding. An amazing group. Great work. Everything has to start somewhere. So even though you might be a little bit small today, you know, everything's incremental. It'll get bigger, and it'll expand, and it'll be better for emergency services in general, you know, and not just women in emergency services.
Correct.
For our patients as well, which ultimately is what we're working towards. So one last thing I'd like to ask you. So, something motivational for the up and comers that are in the profession that are like, I don't know. I mean, because you've been very successful and elevated through. I don't know that I can do this, or I don't know that I can do this for long. You know, what do you say to somebody that's kind of doubting? You know, do I fit in emergency services? Can I make a career out of this? Can I be successful?
I think the important thing is to recognize and stay true to yourself. And if you want it, whatever it is, hard work, honesty, and integrity will go a long way towards getting you there. Don't be afraid to ask for assistance. And it doesn't have to be from women, right? We need men as well to support women. Ask for the assistance you need. Mentors can come in all shapes and sizes, and utilize folks who are really willing to give you honest feedback. Listen to that feedback. Be willing to hear what you might not want to hear, and take that and apply it. And if leadership doesn't speak to you, that's not bad. Do what you love. Right? Not everybody wants to get into management and leadership, but if you do, you can. And that's the key element, I think.
Yeah. Well, great. Good message for everybody up and coming. And like you said, management might not be your end goal. It doesn't have to be. And, you know, success in our individual careers are what we make it. And, you know, our passions and our drive. So great message for those coming up. Again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day. An important message, and, you know, something that GEMS were trying to support, because it is the face of EMS. And this is a growing population. And we do need more diversity in our groups. So we are looking forward to helping with this message as well. So.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today, Ted. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great. Okay. Have a good day. Be safe out there.
Thanks. You too. Bye.